Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
Well, good evening. This is Money, Riches, and Wealth, but this is not Drew Tignanelli. This is the other Italian in the office, Tom Bonvissuto. And I am joined today by Chris O'Shea. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, sir. It's good to be with you. Good to be as the token Irishman.
I'm a quarter Irish, and my mom is proud to remind me of
that's
that.
That's true. That's a good point. You do straddle.
That's
somewhat.
Right. Well, you know, I have the great pleasure to have you here tonight. You were kind enough on your birthday to come in and join me as our fearless leader is away at a conference.
It's an honor. It's an honor to fill in for. It almost takes two of us, right, to fill in for Drew?
At least. he's a great man, and we're excited that he has a little time away to kind of refocus on some things and learn some new stuff for us, and we'll probably hear about it next week.
Sure. I know we will. So, yeah, we're excited. Open show.
That's right. Open show. We want folks to call in. Our number is 410-922-6680.
Right. So everybody out there who calls, you are our guest tonight. So the lines right now are open. You can get on early and get your specific question. We're going to get into some things,
yep.
But they have an opportunity right now.
Exactly. And if they want to talk about their 401k, 529s, what's going on in the investment markets, those kinds of things, Social Security and the like, we'd be happy to talk about it.
So. Politics, as it affects your money, because that's what we care about. That's what we focus
and
on.
It's election year, and we've got some stuff that if folks don't call, we're going to have a long conversation about some of these different topics. So while we're waiting for folks to call in and talk to our friend Noah over there, I've got some ideas to start things out with. And so Drew will do Drew's views sometimes, and I've come up with something called Tom's Take, and I don't take credit for that. I will have to give my son's girlfriend, Jasmine, credit for that name.
Okay.
Of Tom's Take. So,
okay, great.
And now I have to disclose up front here that I have an economic bias about what I'm about to talk about, and we can talk about what that means. But we are educators, and I felt like we have a topic here. It's been a hot topic in my house.
Okay.
And we are fairly narrow, but it's funny. It's also been a hot topic in the office. Everybody's gotten excited. And it's the issue of tipping at restaurants specifically. And so, maybe you're out there, maybe you're a restaurant owner or a waitress, maybe you're going to want to call in and give me some insights. You can educate me, but I've got some ideas for folks out there. And I've really, have an economic bias here because I've had three kids that have been servers in the last couple of years. And Chris, I know you've been in that business a little bit,
sure.
Over the years, and
a long
I did
time
it
ago, but
about
yeah,
30 years ago,
sure.
And things have changed a bit since then. But as my kids have come home over the last 3 years with some stories, I've really kind of been shocked sometimes by what's out there, and so I don't know that all folks that go out to restaurants really appreciate the life of a server. The three of my kids all worked together for several months at the same restaurant. It was a great restaurant, and it was closed down because the owners moved away. And when those owners moved away, and I know this, as an investment guy, it wasn't good. We weren't diversified because everybody worked at the same place.
Right.
And they worked there for spending money, gas in their cars, and stuff like that. And they got paid $3.63 an hour. And plus they got tips. So, first of all, some people may not realize that. Maybe they think they get the full minimum wage hourly, and then the tips is just on top of that. So I want to let people know, that's kind of what standard is, and it's still true today. But then after they're done, with their shift, they've got to pay out the bartenders, the busboys, and other people there, so they don't get to keep all of that. And unlike when you and I were in the business, they actually have to claim their cash tips and put that in. I'm not sure that was done back in the day when we did it,
sure,
at least not as thoroughly as it's done today.
Right.
So two of my kids, after this experience, they ended up going to work for a flat wage and get, I've got one at Chick-fil-A and the other one at Pete's Coffee, and they like that consistency of hours and pay. But what's interesting is at the one restaurant they all worked at, they could be responsible for what I call a dine and dash. Sometimes people walk out of a restaurant and they don't even pay the bill. And that comes out of the server's pocket sometimes at some of these places. And that can really be a hit, especially at, you know, the more expensive places. But, you know, somebody walks out with a $40 bill, that comes right out of the server's pocket. And, you know, so it's been interesting. My oldest daughter, she chose to work as a waitress, and her pay is still $3.63 an hour plus her tips. But other things that people don't realize, they must not realize this. She has actually had some people leave her a zero tip. Now,
as we talked about before, it wasn't as if they forgot.
Right.
They wrote zero.
They literally wrote zero. Actually, she showed me a picture of one the other of last night, actually, and somebody wrote no on it. I said, what happened there? I mean, how bad was it? He says, well, he had been drinking a little bit. And so, but she's the most pleasant person. She's never deserved zero. I can't count. I've never given zero in my life, and I can count on one hand when I've given less than 15% in my entire life. I actually have a little guide called Tipping Etiquette that was given to me by M&T Bank, and it's kind of an interesting thing about what the standards are. And I think there's folks that, you know, they just don't know. There's an ignorance. Maybe they're from another country. And so our standard in the States has been, you know, 15 to 20%. At least that's what I've been brought up on, and my culture has been. And some people don't realize that's what, you know, folks on their receipts, you know, what are they going to put in? And it's interesting that we don't all operate under the same etiquette principles. And it applies over to our financial planning with clients. We ask a lot of questions in order to kind of level set things with folks. I think it's real important that, you know, folks think about it when they go out to a restaurant. You know, like I said, I have an economic bias here. I want you to go, and I want you to tip my daughter well and other folks. And there are folks out there that are lifetime, you know, career servers. I've met husband and wives that's what they do. So, and it's much more than a minimum wage job, the work that they have to do. They have to handle their clothing and things. They've got to gas. I mean, I look at what she's making today, and I look at what I made, you know, 30 years ago, and the cost of gas is three times as much. And she's not making three times what I made 30 years ago in that restaurant business. So the other little bit that I want to toss out there, people don't think about, is when they have a gift certificate. You know, maybe Chris, somebody's going to give you something, a present for your birthday,
sure.
And you go out and you have a $100 gift certificate, and you end up with a bill that's $20. You got to tip on the 120, not on the 20 that's left. Because that server's worked hard, and they've got to get tipped on that bigger amount. And it's amazing how many times people only tip on the amount they've actually paid, you know, that night, and they don't think about the two-for-one deal or the other things that they've got. So I just encourage people out there to tip better, and if you can't afford the tip, don't go out to dinner.
Uh-oh, there it is. Bottom line for Tom.
Yeah, factor
okay.
That in. So, yeah. Well, we do have a couple of calls out here. So we've got Bill in Reisterstown. So let's see if we can pick up Bill in Reisterstown here. Bill in Reisterstown, you want to talk about gold and silver?
Yes. I keep hearing a lot of hype about how much gold and silver are going to go through the roof. First of all, is that true?
Well, if that was true, then we would all be putting our money in there, and we'd be riding that up, and it'd probably be self-fulfilling. Is gold? What would cause gold and silver to go through the roof is really the question. And,
sure.
It's actually interesting. In a couple of weeks, we're gonna be talking about with an author that wrote a book called War and Gold, and some of the tie-ins between wars and gold.
Well, my question is it worth investing in, like, gold coins or silver coins from a coin collector?
Yeah, you know, our perspective on that is that, you know, we don't hold gold and silver coins for clients generally. So clients will go ahead and do that. We've found that, you know, silver investments sometimes can be a better longer-term investment. But, you know, I think folks have gold and silver in their property. I've inherited some from my dad. I wouldn't, you know, it's all about, in my opinion, diversification. And gold and silver has a place for folks. You know, the question is what is that worth? You know, just like anything else, is it, you know, it's only worth what somebody's willing to give you. So if there's a need for that, you know, is there a market for gold and silver? And, you know, there has been historically, you know, there's purposes for it too. You look at different materials. Gold is largely used for jewelry. Silver has more industrial purposes, and then obviously there's other metals being, you know, used out there. So I don't know, Chris, if you have a perspective on gold or silver, you know.
Well, only in that you looked at gold for how, you know, for years, and mm-hmm. went to the point where you knew gold was going to do something, back in the 90s when papers stopped listing it. They stopped reporting on a daily basis because gold was flat forever, and so nothing happened. And then it goes from $275 an ounce up to, what was the peak?
$1,800. I remember when it was, you know, 400 and in the 80s, and then it dropped down.
Into the 200s. Didn't do anything for a long time because it hit a peak in the early 80s. Did $800, went down to $200, and it did nothing. And then it spiked from, you know, all the way up to $1,800. Now it's back down. So what will it do from here? What will cause it to? Well, obviously, inflation will cause.
I mean, people buy gold and silver typically because there's a concern that they believe paper money will be worthless.
Right.
That it will be an inflation hedge. And I think there are other ways to deal with that. And so we're not big advocates of building up a store of gold and silver, but there's some folks that, you know, feel differently, but that's not an area that we approach it.
Yeah, you can have.
I have a comment about tipping as well.
Go ahead. Good. Sure.
I like what you said. However, I've had a few run-ins with, let me put it to you this way. There was a restaurant that's no longer open in Owings Mills, but when it was in business, this server came time for her to leave, and she was complaining to the owner about why she didn't make as much. And this is the rule of thumb to anybody in the hospitality business. Number one, you have to sell yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning you have to make yourself available, helpful. The worst thing to do is give a customer an attitude problem or say to them, you know, just leave them there, and you know where the customer has to ask for everything, rather than you know you offer it to them. And I think bottom line, here's what the owner said. He said, "Why do you ask me? Why I'm just the owner and the cashier. I stand up here. I don't follow you around what you're doing and what so forth."
Sure.
He said, "That's up to you." And you know, you only get what the first of all, if you give a good service, you're more than likely to get a better, you know, better, more tips. But if you take the attitude that, where you are slothful and not helping the customer, bottom line, you hurt yourself. And
exactly.
I think tipping is still a gift. And if you think you're as good as you say you are, then I guess you'll prove it by, I don't think you can teach a waiter or waitress, anybody in the hospitality industry, how to do a job. Yeah. They have to sell themselves, and bottom line, that's it.
Yeah.
And if you give a lousy service, I guess you'll get lousy tips.
Yep. Well, thanks for that feedback, Bill.
That's
and
always right.
We helped you. All right, exactly. There you go.
All
well,
right.
Thanks, Bill.
All
We've
right.
got to take a break
Thank
now
you.
For traffic with Maggie Hunter.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, well, we're going to get right to Rita in Baltimore about 401k deductions. She's been on hold for a little while here. So, Rita, you had some questions about 401k deductions?
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been working at my present employer for about 5 years. 2 years ago, he started a 401k program with a 3% employer match. My deduction was 3% from my payroll, and his match was to be 3%. Well, after about 9 months, I checked my statements, and I had been checking them and never seeing the employer contribution. It's with a major company also, and he never put in the employer match. And I contacted the company, which wasn't tied to our payroll, and they said, well, I see it. He should be. You have to get in touch with the administrator. And I just don't know what's going to become of it. I have 3% that I've always contributed, and it was an employer match of 3%, and I don't know what's going to become of this. I've worked there, like I said, for 5 years. Well, recently I looked at my payroll stub, and no longer is 3% being deducted from my check. It's only 1%. Still says 3% on my check stub, but it's only 1% being taken out. And I just don't know what's going to become of this. I talked with my husband about it, and he said there's no way that, you know, it can go on. It will be found out somehow, but it's been 2 years now.
Right, right.
And I just want to know what happens. And so I did investigate it to be sure that I wasn't dreaming when we signed up for a 3% employer match. And I was told that it was not at his discretion, that it was that he actually signed up for the 3% employer match.
Right.
So I just you know, for my own information, you know, if I would leave the job, how would, and I didn't ask for the 401k. It was brought to the employees one afternoon at a meeting, and everyone signed up, and or people who chose to. I just don't know what happens to, you know, an employee in the situation, and if you've ever run across it.
Yeah, those are great questions, and, you know, sorry for your trouble there. It's a concern that, you know, many employees have is, you know, are my assets secure when I do a 401k? And there are lots of laws out there, and the Department of Labor oversees this, you know, fairly closely. And, you know, the concern, you said that you work for a major company or that the 401k
is
worth...
No, I work for a small company.
Yeah, it sounds like that. Okay.
But there is a major company that is handling the 401k. So when I call them, it's a 24-hour, or not 24, but it's a pretty liberal open hotline where I speak to a technician who can look into my account and tell me, oh, yes, I see that he's not contributing. I mean, he's contributing pennies on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
To every dollar that I contribute. But the funny thing was, in May, I started to notice that although my 401 deduction on my pay stub says 3%, he's actually only taking 1% out of my employee contribution also.
Yep.
My husband said that I was the only one able to change my contribution or my deduction, and I've never done it.
Correct, yeah. So, you know, and that's the challenge we do see as we meet with small business owners. That, you know, they often with these kinds of things, their 401ks, they're not very good at the administration of it, and there needs to be some cleanup. It's not easy to do, and you know, there are companies that are professionals at doing this. You know, there should be a trustee involved at some level, and it may be what we call self-trusteed.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be that the business owner himself is the trustee of the plan.
He is.
And he would be liable, you know, for all of that. If there's a major company, as you point out, that is overseeing the plan.
Yes, sir.
And they've said, you know, that you need to go back to the administrator, which you also may be the same individual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously you need to start with him and retain your records. And then if he's not able to give you some good answers, then you may need to make a call to the Department of Labor, to, you know, have them investigate the plan and make sure that things are in good order. And what is a little comforting is, as you said, there's a major company. And I don't know how you define major, but, you know, if there's a company like a T. Rowe Price, or even if it's an insurance company like a Nationwide or Prudential or those kinds of companies,
it's
and they
that bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those kinds of companies they're reputable.
They're going to be around for a while,
and they're reputable.
So I don't have to worry about them
but they would probably also, you know, want to make sure that things are in order and that, you know, the plan is good, because their, you know, their reputation is also involved in that. But you're right that the employer should not be changing your contribution. You know, some of the questions you brought up was, you know, whether the employer match was a discretionary one, or if they were trying to meet some of the laws out there to avoid discrimination testing and other.
Oh no! When I said that discretionary, it wasn't at his discretion. He had signed up for it. A safe harbor, that's what they call it.
That's right, exactly. I didn't use the term, but that's the that's one of the terms out there, safe harbor, and that gives him certain things. It makes the plan a little easier to operate. Some, you know, people can contribute, you know, including himself, those kinds of things. So, yeah, that would be a concern. I would definitely want to make sure that got straightened out. And it is not uncommon in small companies that because they're doing their own payroll and everything else, that some of those things don't go down the right road, and they do need to be cleaned up. So,
well, yeah, and Department of Labor does not look too kindly on events such as what you're describing taking place. And so that, in the end, if you don't get recourse, satisfying recourse from the business owner trustee, then you do have that recourse to go to the Department of Labor. And once that happens, though, that could just start a whole series of events.
Yep.
Right.
So,
that advice was given to me at one time too. I just wanted to hear, you know, a different perspective or a different. Okay. Well, I appreciate your, you know, just reinforcing what I've think I already know.
Yeah, and good luck with that. And, I mean, I commend you for contributing to 401k. It's an important thing, and you just need to do that. But obviously you need to make sure that the funds are going in and that you're getting the full matching and all the other things due you.
So. Okay. Hey, thank you very much.
All right, Rita. Thank
Have
you.
A good night.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right, let's move in a minute. We're going to come back to Rosalie and Charles and Tom out there. But right now, we are going to go off to traffic with Maggie Hunter.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Okay, well, welcome back. This is Tom Bombacito and Chris O'Shea, and it's Chris's birthday. I expected birthday music there, so maybe next time Bethany will give us a birthday song on the other side. But let's.
We have some open lines. We have several people on the line.
Couple open lines.
May have been holding for a while.
Couple on tipping.
409-222-6680 if you want to get on the line.
Yeah, definitely. Let's dial in. But right now we're going to hop out to Rosalie. So she's been patiently waiting out in Canton. So, Rosalie, you still out there?
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
And I wanted to just give you a little note. I think that was Sean Casey he was talking to. You're the head of the firm.
Yep, Drew. Uh-huh.
Yep.
Drew Tignanelli, yeah. He said he was going to be hurrying back to Baltimore so he would know whether he had a television, a radio show or not when he got back.
Yeah, he was calling in today from out of town talking to Sean.
That's
so
right.
I guess he did that. I didn't hear him.
Anyway, I called about the tipping situation.
Yeah.
I have had some lovely young people that were waiting tables trying to get money. They told me for school, some of them, and some said for expenses. But I tell you the truth, I've also run into some kids with really bad attitudes.
Oh, yeah.
And when I reach that, there's no way I'm giving 15 to 20% for that.
Yep, yep. That's a great point. And I think the earlier point that that Bill made is it is something that it's not guaranteed, and it's for service.
It's a thank you for good service.
It is, but it's also, as we said earlier, it's part of their base wage. It really comes into what they're getting. But I think it should be appropriate.
Then they should be aware of that.
That's right, and I think they are. Obviously, I said I have an economic bias because it's my daughter, and I know she deserves it.
But honey, let me tell you something. Everybody isn't your sweet little baby out there.
That's right. That's right. They're not, and and then they should, I guess, pay the consequence of that. It's funny, I used to be against the firms adding, the restaurants adding 18% for parties of six or more. I now understand a little bit more clearly why they do that, because I was always thinking that people would be lazy and not do a good job. But I think by and large, there's a lot of great servers out there, and we need to take care of them. And that helps the economy more than going to the restaurant, because that actually funds things to come back into the economy so they can go out and spend. And
a lot of restaurants in Europe add the tip.
Well, that's it. And that's what I was saying earlier about the cultural things. I think there's folks that come to here, obviously D.C. and Baltimore, they come to as tourists, and they don't realize the cultural difference. They don't realize that that's not already included. So they're not used to it, and I don't think they participate in it. So if they're driving around the Beltway right now and they don't know that, now they know a little bit more about it. And when we travel to those countries, it's good for us to be aware of the culture and the etiquette in the different countries that are out there. There's actually an interesting website. I don't agree with everything the guy says on it, but it's a tipping etiquette website called tipguide.org that's out there, and it just talks about different issues relative to tipping. And it was also interesting that, the minimum wage debate is out there. And there's actually been a restaurant out in Minnesota that actually added a line item because the different states are adding in a minimum wage across the country, those states, and they're saying, hey, I want everybody to know. It's kind of like, as Chris was saying to me earlier, it's like the old fuel surcharges that we got from UPS and the like. But
they're demanding $15 an hour. Don't they know that when they get that? But a lot of these places will close and they won't have a job.
Right. Yeah, it's a good point, Rosalie. We agree. So we really appreciate your call and your patience.
That's right.
Okay.
To hang on the line.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Have a good night.
Take care of Drew's show.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, it's we're just stewards of Drew's show. That's
right.
It.
We're just stewards.
He shouldn't be worried.
That's right.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks.
All right, we're going to go next here to Charles in Ellicott City. Charles, you've been waiting patiently to talk about investing in 65 and 70. Tell us about that.
Happy birthday, old man.
Thank you. Thank you.
First of all, I wanted to address Rita's question. She said the 401 program was being administered by a larger company.
Right.
I wonder if she's checked to make sure that, yes, the money is there in her account, at least the money that has been pulled out of her paycheck.
Right, right.
And I'm just wondering if a good word of advice would be to bite the bullet, to pull the money out now, pay the taxes on it, and then file a complaint with the Labor Department. Wondering if this guy is doing shenanigans with the money.
It certainly makes one wonder. It certainly does. Yeah, she needs to go in and address that with the owner and get to the bottom of it as soon as possible, not letting any more time go by.
Yep.
All right, the reason I called was nobody knows what you guys have done as far as investments, but what would be your general advice to somebody like me, who is 66, has a fair amount of money in the bank, a house that's paid for, and has enough money to draw down the 4 or 5% a year for the rest of my life? Would you advise that kind of person to change their investment strategies simply because they're as old as I am?
Simply because they're as old as you are, would we recommend a change?
Simply because of my age.
Yeah. And you're saying you've got money in the bank. It sounds like it's fairly conservatively invested, and you have enough there to, in your estimation.
It's very well diversified.
Oh, so it's diversified. It's a diversified portfolio.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I think, first of all, you know, congratulations for, you know, having paid off your home. There's a lot of homeowners nowadays that enter that stage, or, you know, in their 60s and early 70s, that still have debt on their home and have that burden with them. So that's great. And in regards to, you know, your investments, you know, when you say diversified, you know, one of the things we look at is the overall allocation and kind of risks that you might be taking, and really the whole picture. You know, Chris and I were talking earlier about comprehensive financial planning, because it's not all about the investments. There's lots of other things and risks that we take. We take risks in insurance and other you know, kinds of approaches in our financial world. So we look at it comprehensively and then kind of make an adjustment. So we don't base our recommendations strictly on age. You know, we're not in that camp. There used to be a famous talk show host in Baltimore that said 100 minus your age, and that's what you should have in equities. And then as time went on,
if you had a client on the books, let's say working with, had a good relationship with, for let's say 20 years. I'm not sure how long you all been in business. Let's say 20 years.
30 years, yeah.
Okay, 30 years. Okay, he started when he was 40. So and he's and he's gotten age 70. Would you call him up and say, hey, I think we should do things a little differently because you're 70?
No. We wouldn't draw a line at now you're 70. It's an ongoing, it's an iterative process. There's so many things that factor into that along the way. And where is he relative to the goals and objectives that have been set forth? If you don't know what your goals and objectives are, if you don't know where you're going, you don't know when you get there. And we really focus on the whole approach. And so it's not simply an age-based thing. There's a lot of other factors that come into it, including, you know, emotionally, how did you deal with 2008? And, you know, what were the reactions during that time? You know, there's some clients that, you know, panicked during that time and went to cash. Well, you wouldn't tell them to add to equities and put 100% of their portfolio in equities today when the market's hitting new highs, because they're probably going to panic the next time it has a crash in
the
market.
Read between the lines. You wouldn't be a fan of these things. I think what they're called, like, we have these mutual funds and they say 2030, 2040, 2050.
The target date funds. Yeah, no, you know, we've had good discussions about those in the office. I think those funds really have value in the sense that they adjust gradually over time, and can move. And they do it based on retirement dates and ages and things like that. It's not invalid. But it's a good vehicle for people in a 401k where they don't know what to choose. It's a good one-stop shop. But we would factor that in to an overall financial plan.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah,
thanks
pleasure.
For calling.
Thanks for calling, Charles. Those are great questions. Well, Tom, let's get to Tom in Jarrettsville here.
And before you do, to Tom, we still have several open lines here. Just to say you can call us up, 410-922-6680. Just ask your question. Go ahead. You've got Tom talking to Tom.
Yep, Tom in Jarrettsville. You want to talk about tipping?
Yes, sir.
Yes. What do you have to tell us about that?
I've been against it for 70 years. And I wonder why a restaurant doesn't have to pay a living wage so that their employees don't have to grovel for tips. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's really the model that we have here in the States, and that's the way it's been. It's interesting. My mother is in a retirement community, and they have servers there, and in that environment, you're not allowed to tip. So those people are paid, I assume, a living wage. I haven't polled all of them, so that they get a salary and they know what it is, and they continue their employment because they do a good job. They do have other incentives where there's a scholars fund and other stuff, but it's not directed to the individual. So, you know, just like Chris and I keep our job because we do a good job, that, you know, the folks there in that environment don't allow tipping for them. But it is our culture otherwise in the restaurant business. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, restaurant businesses are very low margin businesses. So if you've got wait staff,
hey, there's a lot of low margin businesses.
Yes, there are. And if you've got wait staff that's there and they're just collecting, you know, then you're sending them home, it becomes very disruptive and there's not a lot of incentive. You know, the idea with tipping would be incentives. And but it's been a challenge, Tom, and it's one of those things that I think restaurants, it would be hard for one restaurant to do that, but it would be an interesting strategy, and I haven't heard of any out there that are doing that locally, you know.
Well, that's why I don't go to restaurants.
Okay. Well,
and fortunately, I can cook somewhat.
That's good. That's a good thing. Well, a question. So 60 years ago, I don't know when the model happened. I'm guessing at some point it became such that restaurants, they had hourly payments. People were making hourly wages, and then it switched because they said, we can't afford any longer. And then they went to the model, they changed the model. But it's been that for as long as I can remember, but I don't know when it started.
Right.
Well, I don't know when it started either. I use the term 70 because that's when I, 70 years ago one time when I went to a restaurant and had a bad experience, and that's the reason I don't go to, because, of course, I learned something from my dog. Maybe when I'm eating, I don't want anybody fooling with me. I don't want to be bothered by anything, and I hate these people coming up with all kinds of excuses, you know. Do you want this or do you want that?
Sure.
Yep. Well,
okay.
That's a valid opinion, Tom. We appreciate you staying on the line and for your input. So we're going to take a break now with Mark Thibodeau and with weather.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, well, welcome back. That's More Like It, Noah. We've got a happy birthday song for Mr. Chris O'Shea here, so happy birthday again.
Thank you. There's other people that I think are sports folks. Arnold Palmer, Randy Johnson, it's their birthday too. It's also Jose Feliciano. We talk about music, so there you go.
Feliz Navidad.
Yeah.
So we have Dave in Northwest Baltimore, so let's get out to him in Northwest Baltimore. Dave, you out there?
Yes, I have a question. I'm about 69. I'll be about eight months. I'll be 70 in November.
Okay.
And, you know, they have to require a minimum distribution at the age of 70 and a half.
Right.
Correct.
Right? And I was at a bank, looking for investments. And they told me that I have to do that in the traditional IRA and the Roth IRA. And the thrift, I'm a retired federal employee, so I have the thrift account. Do I have to do it on the Roth also? I thought it was just a traditional IRA and the thrift IRA.
We're just
in the Roth, you don't have to take a minimum distributions, right?
Yeah, Chris and I were just having that conversation. I don't know if, you know, if we've talked about that. Currently, the answer to that question is no.
Right. No to the fact that you do not have to take it from the Roth.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. I'm retired. I've been retired 10
right.
years. I also have another question regarding that. They said that the, well, anyway, they also say something about you have up to a year after the year you turn 70 and a half. Is that right? To take the distribution?
Right. You have to take it by the following tax year. If it's your first distribution, you can do it by April 15th of the year following you turn 70 and a half.
Oh, so by April 15th after the year. Oh, okay.
Right. So you're going to turn 70 and a half. You're turning 70 in November, you said. So you're
right.
not going to turn 70 and a half till 2015. You don't have to take the distribution until April 14th, if you will, of 2016. 16. But then in that year, you're going to be required to take two distributions.
By the end of that year, by 12/31/16, you'll have to take another one. That's right.
Right.
I see. One other thing, he said also that there's a divisor. You don't have to take the entire account out as distribution. There's a divisor of 26 and a half. You divide the total investments by 26 and a half, the principal plus interest earned.
Well, you take
and divide by 26 and a half.
Well, yes. I mean, if you're taking, there's several things, but just simplistically, so if it's on your life, you take the balance as it was the previous year end. So if you're going to take it next year, and Tom's point is you don't have to take it until April of 2016. You might want to, depending on what your income flow is, because you'll have to take another one that same year. So if you're going to take one in 2015, you're going to find out what your values were of your IRA or your thrift savings plan on 12/31/2014. Then you divide it by the divisor. That's your required minimum distribution.
Oh, there is a divisor, and you have to the total account balance.
That's correct.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's a great question, and Dave, we appreciate you being on the line tonight.
Yep, we've run out of time.
Thank you, everybody. We're running out of time. So, from Tom and Chris, God bless.
Radio 680 W.